Our next case is Hanwha Solutions v. Longi Green Energy Technology et al. And REC Solar Proprietary, 2021, 1629 and 1642. Mr. Gloth. We're ready. Please proceed, Mr. Gloth.
If it may please the court, this is Sean Gloth for Appellant Hanwha. And I'd like to begin with the 1145 proceedings, Your Honors. And there I'd like to start with the question of whether the preamble of Claim 12 is limiting. The preamble of Claim 12 is limiting, and that's supported by the claim itself, by the specification, and the prosecution history. So I'll start with the claim itself. The claim begins by reciting a solar cell, and immediately that will tell the person of ordinary skill a specific device that's being addressed. And the claim term solar cell itself, as we'll discuss in a little bit with respect to the prosecution history, also connotes to a posita additional structure such as a contact configuration that is not present in other types of devices like transistors. So I'll touch on that in a second. When we get to the body of the claims, we have an aluminum oxide layer of a very specific thickness, less than 50 nanometers. There's a secondary layer on top of that that's hydrogenated. And that would tell a posita reading the claim in light of the specification that this is the novel passivation stack that's discussed in the specification. And of course, passivation is a solar cell issue. It's not an issue in things like transistors, as our expert explains. So the claim, the claim itself confirms that the preamble is limiting. I want to turn to the prosecution history next, just so we can discuss that portion I was discussing. If I could please direct your attention to page 8462 of the appendix. This is a portion of the prosecution history where the applicant is rebutting an argument by the examiner that the preamble is not limiting. This is one of three instances where the applicant argued that the preamble is limiting. And so at the second to last paragraph here at appendix 8462, the applicant begins by stating that the statement by the examiner, of course, that the solar cell limitation in the preamble provides no distinct definition to the claim is not true. So it doesn't get any clearer than that. The applicant is explaining the preamble is limiting. But the next sentence is the interesting part. Applicant says, based on the general technical knowledge of one skilled in the art, a solar cell is known to implicitly comprise various features which are necessary for a semiconductor device to operate as a solar cell and which are not present in a MOS transistor. The applicant gets specific. If we look at the very next paragraph here, it starts, for example, a solar cell generally comprises a relatively simple structure with emitter regions, base regions, and contacts. That's one of the things we point out in our briefing, Your Honor, below and above on appeal, is the contacts. Contacting each region, where each region or the entire solar cell device has a large area. And the applicant goes on to contrast the transistor. In contrast, one skilled in the art knows that a MOS transistor has a much different structure, comprised of additional electrodes such as a gate electrode that typically covers a small area. And we can see this from our real life. Transistors are little, very, very tiny devices with three pins coming out. That looks nothing like the solar cell you see on the roofs of people's houses with that big, flat, back metal contact. So what's happening here is interesting because the applicant is doing two things. First, he's arguing that the preamble is limiting and using it to distinguish the prior art. But he's also emphasizing that the word solar cell does add additional structure. It does have a meaning to a posita. So the claim doesn't say a semiconductor comprising. It says a solar cell comprising. Here the applicant is also giving up claim scope. He's giving the public notice about what this invention is about, which is another key consideration in claim construction. So the applicant, using no uncertain terms here, is saying this is a device that's a solar cell that means something to a posita, and so this supports...
So why don't you speak English? did in fact know what a posita is, but you're not concerned with word count here, so why don't you talk about a person of ordinary skill in the art?
Yes, Your Honor. Apologies. Person of ordinary skill in the art. So a person of ordinary skill in the art is readily going to understand that that the preamble is limiting and it connotes additional structure. That's also consistent with the teachings of the specification. And I won't go through all of them, and I can't really, because I'd have to read the entire patent. The 215 patent, from the title to the abstract, the purpose of the invention, the background, and every single paragraph talks about one thing, and that's a solar cell. And that's because that's what this invention is. It doesn't mention dielectric layers in a vacuum. It doesn't mention broad semiconductor applications. It's talking about a solar cell, and specifically, it's talking about a novel solar cell stack that is designed to enhance passivation, which again, as our expert explained, passivation is a problem that is, it's a solution to the problem of surface recombination, and that problem is unique to solar cells. So this, the preamble is limiting based on that foregoing evidence. Unless your honors have any questions about that, I'd actually like to jump over to the 1072 case next, just to make sure I get to it.
Please proceed.
Okay. Your honors, I'd like to start with ground three. And ground three is the single reference ground based on Hagino. And the question here, both parties agree, boils down to, does Hagino actually disclose embedding hydrogen in the second layer of embodiment one? That's a very specific question because on appendix 21, the board's finding here is anticipation. So the question is, does embodiment one, when we look at it, either expressly say embed hydrogen in layer two, or does it say use a technique that a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand inherently results embedding hydrogen? Now, the board's finding on this is not supported by substantial evidence. And the reason is because it ignores the plain text of the reference Hagino. And I want to be specific, so if we could please go to appendix 1545. This is the Hagino reference, and this is embodiment one that we're talking about. And in particular, embodiment one's discussion of the second layer, which is the layer at issue here, is on paragraphs 50 through 57. So we look for those two things. First, it's undebated, there's no controversy here, that those paragraphs, and in fact this reference in its entirety, says nothing about embedding hydrogen. So next we look for inherency. Now, the inherency finding by the board on appendix 21, you don't have to flip back to it, I'll explain, is based on a technique called chemical vapor deposition with the abbreviation CVD. So CVD can embed hydrogen. And so the board's finding is that this embodiment teaches CVD, which inherently embeds hydrogen. But the problem is, if we look at these paragraphs, CVD is not here. CVD is not included in embodiment one at all. And that right there should end the inquiry, because to find anticipation, either A, embodiment one has to talk about expressly embedding hydrogen, or B, we have to have a situation where CVD, which the board was pointing to, is mentioned in embodiment one, and it's not there. And I can tell you what happened. The board went to a different embodiment, embodiment two, and I can point you to page paragraph 61 on the same page. Embodiment 2 does talk about CVD. Hagino knows how to say, use CVD to put down the layer. He does it in embodiment 2. And in paragraph 61, that's with respect to a back surface passivation film. And just for a little context here, the second layer I keep referring to is on the front side of the solar cell. And it's the second layer in a stack. This is on the back side of the solar cell, and it's a single layer. So this is completely irrelevant to embodiment one, and at a minimum, it does not show anticipation. The other paragraph that the board cites to, Your Honors, is paragraph 29. And that's on appendix 1543. Here again, Hagino discloses using CVD. So once again, Hagino knows how to discuss CVD. And here at paragraph 29, again, what are we talking about? At the end of the first sentence, a passivation film. And that's key, Your Honors, because the layer in question that we're talking about is an anti-reflection film. That's a different layer with a different job on the front of the cell. Embodiment 1 does have a passivation film, Your Honors. That's the first layer on the bottom. It's not the second layer. So these teachings about using CVD for a passivation film do not apply to Hagino's second layer. And they're certainly not sufficient to show a finding of anticipation. And briefly, I'll just touch on ground four. Ground four is on pages 25 and 26 of the appendix. And the issue with that finding there is essentially that they use their anticipation finding to ignore the party's dispute on obviousness. What they should have done is they should have assumed that we're right, that CVD is not used in embodiment one, and then addressed our argument about motivation to combine. But instead what they did was they said, because we found anticipation, we will not address that argument. And so both of these grounds rise and fall together. So I think I'm into my rebuttal time, so unless there are questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
We will save it for you, counsel.
Thank you.
Appellees are represented by two counsel. Ms. Fukuda, is it?
Yes. Morning, Your Honors. Ching Lee Fukuda from Sidley Austin, representing the appellees Longji and other related parties. I will use about 8 minutes for my argument, then I'll turn it over to co-counsel who's representing REC and Jinko. So I will be addressing the grounds regarding Hagino and the combination of Hagino and Durings. Both of those grounds were found as obviousness grounds, under which the board had found the disputed claims here, claims 12 to 14 of the 215 patent, unpatentable. So first, with respect to Hagino, we heard counsel for Hanwha discuss that there is no teaching or there is no express teaching in the 215 patent regarding using CVD to deposit a silicon nitride layer. And that's not true because as the board has found and the board's opinion, the board's decision is supported by plenty of substantial evidence, the board pointed to the fact that the only teaching in the 215 patent for depositing a silicon nitride layer is through CVD, and that's found in paragraph 29, which is on appendix 1542. And in fact, what they tried to say is, what Hanwha argues is, well, that teaching about using CVD to deposit silicon nitride, that's for silicon nitride as a passivation layer. It's not for silicon nitride as an anti-reflection layer. However, that's also not true. Because as we see in appendix 1542, in paragraph 27, just a couple of paragraphs before that, Hagino specifically says, the exemplary passivation films as listed above also function as anti-reflection films, and so on. So Hagino is very express and deliberate about saying that you use CVD to deposit silicon nitride, and it can be used for either passivation or anti-reflection purposes. There is no division of techniques based on the purpose for which the layer is used. Instead, there's a division based on the materials that are being used. So now we turn to what Hanwha likes to focus on, which is paragraph 55 and 56, where they say, look, there is teaching in 215 about how you make this anti-reflection layer. There's a list of things, and it says to do this through spin coating. Right? And what they neglect to focus on, Your Honors, is that when disclosing the spin coating process under paragraphs 55 and 56, Hagino is explicit. It lists a number of items, which includes things like metal oxides. It also includes a mention of silicon nitride. But what's important here is in paragraphs 55 and 56, Hagino says, when you have and this is again starts in paragraph 55 on appendix 1545, it says a compound containing a metal such as aluminum, tin, tantanium, or the like contained in those oxides may be mixed with solution A. And that's what's used for the spin coating. It deliberately leaves out the silicon nitride. There is no teaching of depositing silicon nitride in the Hagino reference as an anti-reflection layer. The only teaching in the 215 patent for depositing silicon nitride is through CVD. And that is exactly what the board relied on and made factual findings in Appendix 20 and 21 in the final written decision. This is not just substantial evidence. It's what Hagino expressly teaches. And on top of that, the board considered both sides' experts' testimony. It considered Dr. Banerjee, who's Longji's expert. And then it also considered what Dr. Levy, who's Hanwha's expert, had to say to contradict that. And the board actually credited Dr. Banerjee's testimony over Dr. Levy's testimony, and in fact, specifically found that Dr. Levy did not indicate in Hagino or elsewhere any disclosure that spin coating was a recognized method for depositing a silicon nitride layer. So all of this express teaching in Hagino, the expert testimony, all of that was brought together to support the board's finding of obviousness under Hagino. And that's more than substantial evidence, Your Honor. And just quickly, under the combination of Hagino and Durings, even if you were to make a finding that Hagino's teaching was not sufficient in this regard, the board then found that Durings teaches the depositing using CVD. And if anything, even if you found that the anti-reflection layer in Hagino is not done by CVD, there is motivation to a person of ordinary skill in the art to look at the CVD deposition technique used in Durings and apply that technique to the anti-reflection layer in Hagino to make this anti-reflection layer. And it is not true what Hanwha states, which is that if you make a finding against Hagino alone, you automatically make a finding against Hagino and Durings. It is not overlapping. We have made the argument that even if you find against Hagino, you should, there's plenty of support saying that, which the board had found, saying that you can use the technique, the CBD technique in Durings, apply it to the anti-reflection layer. And what that automatically does, and Dr. Levy even agrees, is when you use a CVD technique to make a silicon nitride layer, that results in embedded hydrogen in that layer. And this can be found in Dr. Levy, who is Hanwha's expert's testimony in Appendix 6907 at paragraph 116. So, and the reason a person of ordinary skill in the art would be motivated to do so is because when you have embedded hydrogen in that layer at the top, the embedded hydrogen will permeate through the layer beneath it and further passivate or improve the passivation of the dangling bonds at the silicon substrate. And that, again, is has plenty of support in the board's final written decision. And you can find that, Your Honor, just point to you very quickly, in Appendix 24 to 27. So, Your Honor, unless you have questions or are interested in hearing about the affirmative ground for affirmance, I can see the rest of my time.
Fine. We will add it to Mr. Coliani's time since you're both appellees.
May it please the Court, Joseph Coliani on behalf of the appellees REC and Code Board. As the Court is aware, the Board's final written appeal makes findings of obviousness and rests on three disputed grounds, namely whether the El Rangar prior art reference discloses the first and second dot layers of the level, whether Inkwell Kimball played limitation. Each of these findings supported by detailed factual findings made by the board. In particular, the board considered the expert testimony relating to the interpretation of the 215 patent to a person skilled in the art, as well as testimony with the interpretation of prior art references and the underlying semiconductor technology. And it resolved the disputes accrediting Kelly's expert Dr. Fleming's testimony over that appellant set. What the appellants do here is ask this court to weigh the factual evidence, make it come to a different conclusion. And the court to find that indication because substantial evidence, wanted to focus on the preamble issue in particular, the time I have.
We'll move to a telephonic argument because you're not coming through well.
Thank you, Your Honor. Would you like me to start from the beginning? Were you able to hear what I said before the audio mishap?
Probably you should.
Okay. I'm very sorry about that, about the audio issues. Let me start.
You have more than 7 minutes anyway.
Correct. May it please the Court, Joseph Coliani on behalf of appellees Jinko Solar and REC. As the Court is aware, the Board's findings of anticipation and obviousness rest on three disputed issues, namely whether the Nalwankar prior art reference discloses the first and second dielectric layers of Claim 12, and whether the preamble of Claim 12 is limiting. Each of these issues involves factual findings made by the Board. They're supported by substantial evidence. In particular, the Board considered and weighed detailed expert testimony from both parties' experts relating to the interpretation of the 215 patent, relating to the interpretation of prior art references, and relating to the underlying semiconductor technology. And the Board resolved this factual dispute by crediting the testimony of appellee's expert, Dr. Clemens, over that of appellant's expert. Appellant here is asking this panel to reweigh that factual evidence and come to a different conclusion. The Court should respectfully decline that invitation because the Board's conclusions are supported by substantial evidence. I would like to focus on the preamble of Claim 12 that was discussed by counsel a few moments ago. The preamble, the Board came to the correct conclusion that the preamble here is not limiting. The preamble recites merely a solar cell and no more. The solar cell is discussed in the patent specification. However, the invention here, the purported invention of the 215 patent, is the passivating layers that are formed on the top of the substrate in order to passivate the cell and prevent recombination losses. The claim is not reciting a solar cell generally. The specification makes that clear to a person skilled in the art, and counsel indicated that the term solar cell somehow connotes additional structure. However, none of that structure is recited in the body of the claim. The body of the claim merely recites the stacking, the first and second layers, and the silicon oxide layer on top of the substrate. This is the passivation stack.
Does it matter whether the preamble is limiting?
It does not matter ultimately, Your Honor, because the record here there's sufficient evidence, substantial evidence in the record for this panel to affirm the Board whether the preamble is considered to be limiting or not. If this panel agrees with the Board, there's substantial evidence supports the finding of anticipation. If the panel disagrees with the Board and finds the preamble to be limiting, there is unrebutted evidence in the record that that the use of Nalwankar's technology in the context of a solar cell would have been obvious to a person skilled in the art. There was detailed evidence put in the record by Dr. Clemens that was not addressed by appellant and therefore was waived. The only argument made below was that the prior art references were allegedly not analogous art. That's an argument rejected by the Board. There was no rebuttal made to Dr. Clemens' detailed obviousness showing. So ultimately, it does not matter, Your Honor, whether the Board was correct or not regarding the limitation of the preamble, although the Board, if I may, was correct. And if I could just address the point regarding the prosecution history, counsel pointed to an argument made in a September 2013 amendment in which the applicant did argue that the solar cell preamble should be distinguishing over certain prior art, including the Fujisaki reference. What counsel did not direct you to was the subsequent prosecution history. In November of 2013, the examiner came back in a office action and said, "I disagree." The explicitly said that the preamble language is not limiting and should get no patentable weight. This was reiterated in remarks made in response to an examiner amendment, at which point applicant pivoted and argued a different ground. And that is seen in the at appendix page 8408. This is a February 2014 amendment in which the arguments directed to Fujisaki are squarely and clearly focused on the ordering of the layers of the passivation stack and not at all on the solar cell preamble language. So I agree an argument was made. However, it was quickly abandoned after the examiner rejected it. This is very similar to this court's opinion in the Catalina case, which is cited in our briefing. It's 288 Fed 3rd 801, in which applicant similarly was told by the examiner during prosecution that the preamble language did not patently distinguish. And applicant then pivoted and argued different grounds in the body of the claim. That's exactly the fact pattern we have here, and that was spelled out in Catalina at 289 Fed 3rd page 810. I mentioned earlier that there's sufficient evidence in the record as well to affirm the board based on obviousness. It's called out in our briefing, and I won't reiterate it in any detail, but Dr. Clemens submitted a lengthy declaration explaining why it would have been obvious to extend Nalankar's teachings to a solar cell, including the disclosure of Nalankar and several other background references that use very similar technology as Nalankar and how they were used in solar cell. This was, again, not addressed by appellant. And the record, therefore, the only evidence-supported record here is that should the preamble be considered limiting, that claims 12 through 14 would be obvious in the prior art. Unless there are any questions, I will save the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Foliani.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gloth has a little rebuttal time. You may proceed.
So the question was asked, does it matter if the preamble is not limiting? And you heard an incorrect answer. In fact, it's dispositive here because the only findings of fact made in 1145 are on anticipation. There was no finding of fact with respect to obviousness made by the board for the ground five. They merely cite back to anticipation. So it absolutely does matter. I also want to talk about the prosecution history. So there wasn't an abandonment of our argument in the prosecution history. At appendix 84.117, in an interview summary, the examiner notes that this debate came up again, that the solar cell preamble was limiting and it distinguished Fujisaki. And then again, in response to second rejection at 84.07, applicants, quote, reiterate below arguments presented in the interview and go on to talk about how this is an invention about a solar cell. So we didn't abandon. And I'd like to point out, in the 2,000 pages of subsequent prosecution history, there were no non-solar cell references presented. And that's why we didn't amend the body of the claims, because it wouldn't have mattered. The solar cell was no longer at issue because the prior art relied on by the examiner was a solar cell. If anything, that shows a pivot by the examiner. With respect to the expert testimony, that's extrinsic evidence that we don't need here because we have the claim specification and the prosecution history supporting that the preamble is limiting. And with respect to the Catalina case, that case is easily distinguishable because their applicant did not even argue in prosecution that the preamble was should be used to distinguish the invention. Moving to 1072, the question once again here is about anticipation, and they talk about obviousness, but the problem is for ground three, there are no findings of fact on obviousness. The petition presented an anticipation argument and an obviousness argument. Only the anticipation argument is addressed on page 21 of the appendix. With respect to ground four, same problem. If you look at page 25 and 26 of the appendix, they do not address the dispute we had about motivation to combine. And they use their anticipation holding to sidestep that argument. So again, that record has not been developed. There's outstanding findings of fact there. So those grounds rise and fall together. With respect to the paragraph 27 that was mentioned of Hagino, that all that says is that passivation layers can contribute to anti-reflection. That's not the question at hand here, because the layer in question is not the bottom passivation layer, which they rely on for another limitation. It's the anti-reflection layer, the secondary anti-reflection layer. And the appropriate question is, does anything in Hagino say that that second layer should be embedded with hydrogen? And paragraph 27 does not say that. And I think that's all I have for rebuttal. Thank you for your time, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. That concludes today's argument.